Welcome to Parshas Vayigash, Tavshin Ein Dalet. We're now on Yom Tov Sheni of Hanukkah, like day 9, but right, we're still Isruchag, an Isruchag of Hanukkah. I'd just like to share with you one query, a question I have, and I'd really love to hear your input. And then we'll follow into Parshas Vayigash. We've just had 8 days of inspiration, learning about the Chashmonoim, Ara Gvurois, Vara Milchomois, Masata Giborim Beat Chaloshim, Verabim Beat Maatim, and they went to fight against all odds. They went to fight for the Torah, and they went to fight an empire, the Greek Empire, and they didn't care, and they won the battle. That's amazing. Now the question is, should we imitate the Chashmonoim? Should we follow their ways? Of course. And I ask, is that true? Is halacha kamaisam? Are we allowed to follow their ways? Is that true? That when the Torah is at stake, we can't do mitzvahs, we should go and fight? We should go and fight, take our weapons and start fighting against all odds? Is that really true? I ask a question. It fell on me just 24 hours ago, this question. Let's look at Jewish history. Jewish history is full of gzeiros. There was a gzeira not to learn Torah. Rabbi Kiva went and he taught Torah by Rabbim, and he was caught. There are many mitzvahs it was Yehare Valiavor. They were Moitzah Nefesh. They gave their life up for the mitzvah. They risked their life. But did they ever, since the Chashmonoim, did they fight the Malchus? I'm unaware of any precedence for this. Since the Chashmonoim, there was a gzeira not to wear tefillin. Elisha Barak and Fahim, he wore tefillin. So the Kazdor ran after him. He was wearing tefillin, and the Kazdor ran after him, and Elisha took it off. And he said, "What do you have in your hand?" He said, "Right, a dove. Okay. And then this happened. There was a dove. But did he fight? Did he go and kill the Kazdor? Never. Why do we blow shofar on Musaf on Rosh Hashanah? Why not blow on Shacharis? Says the Gemara, yeah, you're supposed to blow in Shacharis. It's really Magdimin. What happened? There was a gzera not to blow. So the goyim were there waiting at Shacharis to see if they're going to blow. So that's why we blew at Musaf. And since then, Kimishu Gozru. There's countless cases of gzeras against the Torah mitzvahs. And we're Moisa Nefesh, and when it's appropriate, we risk our life to keep the mitzvahs. But never. Do we find in Jewish history they went to fight the Malchus? Please, you fill me in. If you know more than me.
I mean, what about Israel in the last 6 years? We're fighting all the time.
Okay, this is a very very interesting. A very important sugi to go through. I don't know if this is exactly Mechemes HaChashmonoim. There's other reasons why. Yeah. But that. Okay. These are very broad topics, which definitely cannot be dealt with right now. But I don't know if they're fighting. I'm not sure the people are fighting within Gzeiras Hashem. That's not. They wanted independence. It wasn't only. Yeah. Uh huh. The Chashmonaim won. Is it Dinan Eretz Yisrael? You're fighting for Torah. They didn't know they were going to win. It was Giborim Biyat Chaloshim. They were weak and they were few. They were fighting to be killed. They didn't expect to stay alive. They were Moisei Nefesh. So we should do the same. And then what happened? So indeed, apparently, maybe Golos is different. Maybe we're forced to say that Golos is different and we can't fight anymore. But I found this morning in the Kovet Tzoros, the back of the Kovet Tzoros in Yevamos, that Rabbi Chana Wasserman has Biurim Aderach HaPshat over there in Siman Yud. And yesterday someone showed me in Darkei Musar from Rabbi Yaakov Naiman. Rabbi Yaakov Naiman relates that he had Shalashudas with the Chofetz Chaim, and the Chofetz Chaim was shouting, why is it when the communists rose to power, took power, why didn't we fight the communists? It was the Gzeres Hadas, they had a special Jewish department, the Yevskas or something like that, and they were eradicating, they made a shmad against Jews, they were to close down all the Chadorim, and to keep Torah mitzvahs in communist Russia was absolutely dangerous. They, people will be sentenced to Siberia like nothing, like you get a parking ticket, people will be sent to Siberia. So, and Chofetz Chaim was shouting, we should have fought against them. And Rabbi Chana writes the same thing. Rabbi Chana writes the same thing, and he also b'shem Chofetz Chaim. Chofetz Chaim claimed, we should have fought, that was a mistake. We should have fought against them. So we see that it is something that we should imitate. Later, I really don't know. Jewish history doesn't give us examples of us fighting against the Malchus. Yet the Chofetz Chaim says we should have fought against communist Russia. Okay, I'm leaving it open. So if you'll have what to tell me, please tell me. Yes?
That's true.
But still, when it does happen, you know, in Spain, no one went to fight the Inquisition. No one fought them. So even we don't find even isolated incidents, we don't find them fighting the Malchus. Yes. I'm asking, the Romans were also Malchus Kfira, Edom, and yet we didn't fight, you know, in the Mishnayos and the Gemaras, you don't find them fighting the Romans.
We did.
Well, who wants to fight? Yeah, right. And Chachomi didn't want to, right? Yeah, but that wasn't a question of doing Torah mitzvahs or not. That's a matter of who's going to run, who's going to be in control. But to keep Torah mitzvahs, according to the criteria, that example we're getting from the Hashmonaim, we should be fighting. Yet, when they made Xerah not to teach Torah, Rabbi Kiva taught Torah, but he didn't fight. Okay, this is the question we have. Yes? They thought he was Mashiach. You're right, Bar Kokhba. They thought he was Mashiach, so that's also different. Okay, it's a very interesting question, and please be very happy if you could fill me in. Okay, so we're starting our Parashas Vayigash. Now, Parshas Vayigash, there's the famous Beis HaLevi, which I'm sure you've all heard of before. But it's such a classic. It's such a classic that every year I repeat it again. For myself. And I like together to learn the Beis HaLevi. To see all the sources in, to see all the psukim. And see it's such a powerful classical that Vatora that we, it's something to repeat every year to ourselves, to our families. It's about the Pasuk in Perek Mem Hei, Pasuk Dalud. Vayoyme Yosef al Echov, Ani Yosef, Oido Vichai. So we're in the middle of the drama. For a few weeks, we've been traveling, been joining together with the brothers as they go down to Mitzrayim, and they meet Yosef face to face, unaware that he's their brother. Yosef accuses them of being spies. Yosef, therefore, takes Shimon as a hostage, and he forces them to bring Binyamin down. And indeed, they come down, and Yosef, then he managed to capture Binyamin. He makes a plot against Binyamin, and here comes Yehuda, and he comes to plead for Yosef to release Binyamin. And that's what we're learning. Vigash Yehuda. So first of all, when they come down to Mitzrayim, second time, coming down with Binyamin, in Parshas Vayeshev, Perek Mem Gimel, Pasuk of Zayin, Yosef's asked them a question. Vayomru, Hashalom, Vayomar, Hashalom Avichem Azokein, Asher Amartem Oidenu Chai. When he meets them, they come down with Binyamin, and he asked them, "How's your father doing? Is he alive?" And they tell him, "Our father's still alive." And the question is, why does Yosef, when he asked them, he says, "And Yosef, at the happy ending of 'Here I am, I'm your brother,' Yosef asked them, 'Ha'oid avi chai, is my father still alive?'" You already asked that question before. You already asked the first thing you met them. You asked, "Is our father still alive?" And we told you yes. Why are you repeating the question? This is before the days of emails, news flashes, and SMS. Right? They must try, and nothing's happened. They haven't gone back, so whatever information they told him a day ago is true for today as well. Why is he repeating the question, "Oid avichai"? Furthermore, when we study Yehuda's claim, Yehuda's speech, what was Yehuda saying to Vaygasher of Yehuda? What was Yehuda telling Yosef? He said, "Listen, you asked us to bring our brother Binyamin. We have an old father, and no, we can't do this to our father. You want to take Binyamin? Okay, he's a thief. You claim he's a thief. He stole your becha, your cup. Okay. But you can't do this to our father." And we read the psukim, and Judah says, very emotional speech, "Vato, pasuk lamed, kavoy el avdecha avi, v'anar einenu itonu, v'nafshoy krura b'nafshoy." We're going to come back to our father, and they're so close together. "V'akir oisoy ke'en anar v'meis." He'll see that the nar's not there, he'll die. "V'aridu avdecha esevas avdecha avinu b'yogin sholo." Be terrible tragedy that our father will die so such a sad way. "How can I come back to up to my father without the nar?" Pen erev rosh sofi, in a very emotional speech, and he's talking about what's his claim. He's not denying the allegations. He's acknowledging that maybe indeed Yosef Binyamin stole the cup. Let it be, but you can't do that. You cannot cause such suffering to our old father. And then Yosef gives a happy ending. He says, "You know, Ani Yosef, Oida Vichai." And it's a nice happening. Okay, now you're telling the truth. "I'm Yosef, so it's fine." Yet, why is he asking, "Oida Vichai"? The whole speech of Yehuda was all about Yaakov Tsar, if you keep Binyamin. So obviously he's alive. Didn't you hear what I said? That's what he was talking about. That Yaakov is alive and he'll get great tsar. Why are you asking, is he still alive? Furthermore, if indeed it's a question, where's the answer to the question? Yosef says, and that's it. There's no answer. Why? Where's the answer? Tell him. Later on, Yosef then sends, go back to your father, bring him back, bring him down. How do you know he's alive? You just asked a question, no one answered you, yet now you're sending us back to our father. We didn't answer the question. Furthermore, in Pasuk Gimel, he says, and Yosef. The next Pasuk, Vayoma Yosef Alecha, Vayoma Ani Yosef Achechem. I'm Yosef, your brother. What happened? What changed? The Pasuk before he says, Vayoma Yosef Alecha, Ani Yosef, Hoido Bichai. And he doesn't say brother. The next Pasuk he says, Ani Yosef Achechem. Yosef, your brother. What changed? Okay, so these are the questions. We're trying to understand, why did Yosef ask Ha'od Avichai? Question number one, in Parshas Vayeshev, when he met them, when he came down to Mitzrayim, he asked them, is our father still alive? And they said yes. Question number two, Yehuda's whole speech was about our father's tzar, so he must be alive. Question number three, if it's a question, where's the answer? They didn't tell the answer. Question number four, what changed between Pasuk Gimel Ani Yosef and then Pasuk Dalet Ani Yosef Achechem? What changed? The Beis Halevi brings the famous Medrash. Omar Kohen Bardala. Oy lonu miyoyim hadin. Oy lonu miyoyim atoychecha. Woe to us the day of din. Woe to us the day of judgment. That Yosef ktanon shel shvatim. Yosef, the youngest of the shvatim. Hoya. They couldn't stand in front of his rebuke. They couldn't answer him because they were so frightened, shocked. When we come up to the next world, call echod ve'echod lefi ma shehu. When Hashem will rebuke every individual lefi ma shehu, as he is, alachas kama v'kama, we won't have what to say. This is the Medrash right here on the spot. What's the Medrash talking about? From the fact that the brothers couldn't respond to Yosef's rebuke, that's what's going to happen in the world to come. We won't be able to respond to HaKadosh Baruch Hu's rebuke, and we don't understand which rebuke. Where did Yosef rebuke them? He didn't say anything to them. He just said, I'm Yosef. Where's the rebuke? Furthermore, what's the difference between Yom Hadin and what's the difference between Yom HaTaychecha? Oilonu Yom Hadin. What's the difference? Now, what does it mean? What does that mean? We'll rebuke everyone as he is. All these questions are asked by the Beis Levi. So again, this is the Medrash on the spot. The Medrash is talking about that the brothers couldn't respond to Yosef's rebuke. Question number one, where's the rebuke? He didn't say anything to them. Question number two, what's the difference between Yom HaDin and between Yom HaToychecha? Question number three, what does that mean? Yochiach kol echo lefi mashehu. Rabbi, we think that the drama of the story, the tension, the fear, finishes at the end of Yehuda's speech. And Yehuda says, how can I go up back to my father? And we think that the sweet, happy ending was, Ani Yosef, I'm your brother. That's what we think. Big mistake. The pinnacle, the spitz of what happened, of Yosef's terrorizing, torturing the brothers, was at this point when he said, Ani Yosef. He was slapping them on their face. He was beating them up to smithereens when he said that. Why? Not literally, but that's what he emotionally as he was doing to them. First of all, he says, Ani Yosef. Hup! And they realize, this is the person they did bad to him. They sold him. He now has power over them. Who knows what he's going to do to them? It wasn't good news to say, I was there. I'm Yosef. Because that means he has a personal revenge, personal agenda against them. But when he says, Ha'oida Vichai, he was slapping them on his face. He was boomeranging, recoil, the whole of Yehuda's speech back onto him. Why? Because what was Yehuda saying? Yehuda was saying, what flag was he waving? My father! My father's feelings. You, the vice president of Egypt, you should take into consideration my innocent father's feeling, and you should release Binyamin because you're going to harm him so much. That was Yehuda's speech. And says Yosef to them, Ani Yosef, Ha'oid of Michai, is my father still alive after what you did to him? What are you talking about? You hypocrites! You tell me that I should take your father's feelings into account? Who are you fooling right now? I need Yosef! Where is my father still alive after what you did to him? You, Yehuda, and all the brothers, what you did? When you sold me, you didn't take my father's feelings into account. So who are you to preach to me that I should take your father's feelings into account? It was a tremendous tzichacha. Yehuda took such a wonderful speech again, such an emotional speech. He threw it back in his face. And what did the brothers say back? They had nothing to say. They had nothing to say. When I was a kid, they used to say, sussed out. That was the pinnacle of the rebuke. It wasn't a question that needed an answer. It was a rhetorical question. Is he still alive after what you did to him? And if he's still alive, he could be alive again. He can still live after what if I won't give Binyamin back. The next pasuk was, Ani Yosef Achichem, I'm your brother. That was the happy end. And therefore, what happened was, he showed them how to soister themselves from themselves. He showed Yehuda, from Yehuda's own speech, that you're a hypocrite. That you are countering your own actions. You're soister yourself from yourself. Now back to the Midrash. That's what the Midrash is referring to. Oylonu miyem adin, oylonu miyem teichecha. What's the difference between din and teichecha? Says the Beis Halevi. Din, we're going to come up to Shemaim, and they're going to challenge us. And there's a din. You didn't do your mitzvah. There's a din for that. There's a punishment for that. What's going to happen? We're going to have tirutzim. Have excuses. Now the excuse is just an excuse, but still diminishes the din. For example, why didn't you give tzedakah? Didn't have money. I was very tight. I didn't finish the month. I didn't have money to pay for tzedakah. Al-pi-din, that's insufficient. Because even Oni needs to give tzedakah. So the din doesn't allow for that excuse. But the excuse has a weight, has bearings, because a rich man who doesn't give tzedakah is not the same as a poor man who doesn't give tzedakah. Okay. A guy who has endless amount of money he doesn't give is not the same as a poor man who was indeed tight. So even though it's an excuse and a pidin, you should still have given tzedakah, but the excuse indeed takes away the severity of the sin. But then comes the teichacha. And what is the teichacha? We show that person how he soser himself from himself. What happens? We show him, hey, when you saw that delicious food over there, when you had that taiva, or that exciting electrical gadget over there that you really, really wanted, and you just went and wrote a check, you wiped your card, just like that. You're on vacation, all of a sudden this attractive thing, you just wiped your card. What happened then? What happened to your money? I thought you were so poor. So what does that show? The things you really wanted, you knew how to write a check. So why didn't you write the check for the tzedakah? Because you didn't really want it enough. That's the teichacha. They'll show the person from himself, from his other actions in different fields, will be soser himself and will take away the excuse. Oylanu miyom adin, oylanu miyom teichacha. And that's what the Medrash means. Kol echad ve'echad lefi mashehu, from himself to himself. He asked the person, "Why did you learn Torah?" He says, "Oh, I wasn't gifted. Wasn't gifted to learn Torah." So apidin, that's insufficient. So what? Still learn. It's more bizarre. You didn't enjoy it. Still learn. But the excuse has a weight, you know, because the person doesn't enjoy his learning. It's very difficult for him. He's dying to get out of here. So, okay, so take that into consideration. But then they show him, for other things, he was a genius. When it came to fool people, to make a deal with someone, he was so cunning. He had all these ways of persuading people and hiding that information, and all of a sudden you're a genius. What happened? You have the abilities. Question: where do you want to put them? That's the teichecha, and the teichecha will make a person be soser himself from himself. So from his own other actions will cancel the excuse he has over here, and that's what we learn from this incredible Beis Halevi. Once I was giving a Daf Yomi Shir in a certain area. I approached many people, come enjoy the Shir. It's too late. So it's a night Shir. I'm too tired. One day during the Shir, this was many years ago, so there was a big noise, helicopters. This was in Beit Shemesh. Big noise, helicopters on top of the building, and just overhead. Someone in Shir who had one of his Atzala beepers, and he really told everyone there's a big accident happening over here, very nearby. And the Shir was over, and there was a Chove Yarden, and you could see the Henry Yarden, see over into Kvish Esser, you know, that road at the bottom. There's a huge accident over there. The whole street was full of red lights, fire engines and ambulances. And there were two helicopters that landed in the field between Yarden and that back road. The two helicopters landed to take away. I think the guy died in the end. It was a very bad accident. And you know what? I look at Rav Yarden, and what do you think is happening over there? It's packed with people. Packed with people. It's late. Aren't you tired? Tired? Who's tired when you have two helicopters landing next to your house? There's no one tired. What do you mean? Everyone's out, looking, interesting. Makara. What do you mean? all depends. What does that show? If it's interesting, you're not tired. That's what it shows. It's all a matter of perspective. Therefore, we come to Shemayim and we ask questions and we give excuses. Kosh Boruch is going to show us. That after the din, there'll be tochecha. That from ourself to ourself, how we censor ourselves. I just remembered right now, there was a bocher in the mirror, and he wouldn't get up for shacharis. He was sleeping every day. And it came to the day of his flight. And Rav Nochum Protsovitz, this is a story that I've been told. And Rav Nochum, Nor Shiva, said, can you imagine the tefillah of being Shemayim if this guy gets up? Every day he sleeps in. And the day of his flight, he should get up. See, Davin, the guy missed his flight. But that's what it's going to be like. We have all excuses. I couldn't get up. Sadia, when he came for that, the day of your tiyul or your flight, you're up. You're full of energy. And that's oylonu miyoyim adin, oylonu miyoyim tichecha, the yosef tana shashvatim, and vayochlu echov lano is oisa mipnei tichachtoi. When he rebuked them, they didn't have what to say. Ani yosef ha'oido vichai. Is my father still alive? After all that you tell me, you told me how your father's going to be suffering, he's going to take it to heart so much, he's going to suffer. Is he still alive after what you did then? I'm Yosef, I know what I'm talking about. Why didn't you take your father's feelings into account then? Hypocrite, you're a hypocrite. You're a hypocrite. Fellow Yochlu Echov Nai Yosef had nothing to say, he had nothing to say. Nothing. And that is what's going to be in Osi Lover. Oylonu b'yoyim adin, oylonu b'yoyim etercheicha. This is a classic. I say it every year. In Pasuk, Lamed Aleph, Yehuda said, V'ato kavoi el abdecha avi, V'hanar einenu itanu, V'nafshoi kshura b'nafshoi. Yehuda's describing how his soul, beyond his soul, is kshura b'nafshoi. Says the Baal HaTurim on the spot, says it's written twice in the Masorah. We have a Masorah, but it's written twice. It's like this. Sorry? In Masorah, he brings a Masorah, a tradition of parallels. And we have over here, Nafshay Kshura B'Nafshay. We have a Pasuk in Mishle, in Perikov Beis, Pasuk Tezvav, that says, Iveles Kshura B'Lev Na'ar. Iveles means foolishness, Chet, is Kshura B'Lev Na'ar. So we have over here, Nafshay Kshura B'Nafshay. Binyamin's soul is Kshura B'Nefeshov Yaakov. And we have the Iveles is Kshura B'Lev Na'ar. Foolishness is tied in the heart of the youth. Explains the Baal HaTurim. What does that mean? What's the message over here? That since Iveles, foolishness is tied to the heart of a youth, youths are, they're fools. What's the remedy? Is Nafshay Kshura B'Nafshay. He needs to be tied to his father, to his teacher. That's how to combat the foolishness that's tied to the Na'ar. He needs to be tied to a teacher or to a father. And how is that? Maybe play sports together, have fun together, says the Baal HaTurim. Kshura is the gematria of Torah. Look it out. Kshura is the gematria of Torah. So we see a big principle in Chinuch that they have to be connected together through Torah. The father, the teacher, has to be connected to the youth, who is connected to counter his other connection or foolishness. This is the kosher internet. These are the connections that need to be done. He's connected to Iveles, We need to connect him to his father, to his teacher. That's how. That's what Yehuda is saying. Nafshay shurba nafshay. So even though he did steal the cup, you need to send him back to his father, because that's the remedy. That is going to fix him up. So this is important. A message that as a achrayus, to build that kesher, to build that kesher with the child, so that we can direct him to take away his ivelis. Vayomer, okay, Paroi meets Yaakov. Yaakov comes down to Mitzrayim, and in Pasuk Peret Mem Zayim, Pasuk Ches and Tes, Vayomer Paroi Yaakov, Kama Yemei Shnei Chayecha, how old are you? Peret Mem Zayim, Pasuk Tes now. Vayomer Yaakov al Paroi, Yemei Shnei Mugurai Shloishim Ma'as Shono, I'm 130 years old. Ma'at v'roim ayu yumei shnei chayai. A bit and a bad. V'isigu es yumei shnei chayai avoisai v'imei mugureim. I didn't reach the age of my forefathers. So Yaakov describes his life as ma'at v'roim, as few and bad. The das kenim, Bali Atoysu das kenim, bring a medrash on the spot. When Yaakov said Ma'at v'roim, Omer HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ani milatiticho, I saved you mi Esav umi Lavan, I brought Dina back to you, also Yosef gave back to you, and you're angry and you say Shemat v'roim, you're complaining after I saved you from all these things. Chayecho sheminyan hatevoi sheyesh min avayomer ad v'mei mugurai, the amount of letters, the amount of words between the beginning of the pasuk of Vayomer till the end of the pasuk of Meimugureim, I'm going to take away from your life. That's 33. The 33 words, that you're going to lose 33 years. Because Yitzchak lived to the age of 180. And you're only going to live 147. So therefore, you lost 33 years against the 33 words. That's the medrash brought down over here. You're complaining? So for every word that was told, had to describe, you lost a year. Ask Reb Chaim Shmulevitz. Okay, we can understand from Yaakov's complaint, every word he complained about, he mentioned, he loses a year of his life. We understand the logic. But eight of those words weren't said by Yaakov, they were said by Paroi, because the first eight words are Vayoma Paro El Yaakov Kama Yemei Shnei Chayecha. So the first eight of those 33 words, which are 8 years of the 33 years, weren't phrased by Yaakov, they were phrased by Paroi. He asked questions, how old are you? So why is Yaakov being punished for Paroi's question? So if fact of Chaim Shmulevitz in Sichos Musa Tovshin Named Aleph Gimel, he answers, because as the Das Kenim explained himself, why did Paroi ask him how old are you? Because he saw that Yaakov would look so old. He's such an old man. He asked him, how old are you? Why did Yaakov look so old? He wasn't really that old. What's the answer? Because he took his sorrows to heart. He took it to heart. He felt have a bad life and made him look old. Therefore, since Yaakov took the sorrows to heart, which caused him to look old, which caused Paroi to ask him, how old are you? It's all included in the Gzeira. Okay, two more points. And this is good for the Gaboyim. before Yaakov goes down to Mitzrayim, it says in Perek Mem Vav, Pasuk Chof Ches, V'es Yehuda Shalach Lefonov El Yosef L'Horeis Lefonov Goshno. He sends Yehuda down before he arrives to set things up. What was Yehuda doing? So Rashi brings down in the Medrash, L'Horeis Lefonov L'Takenoi Beis Talmud Shemishon Teitzayro. So open yeshiva for the Antoira and Nedel Del Paskin. This is Yaakov Lishitasai. Before he goes to Beis Lavan, what does he do? 14 years, Shem Eva, Antoira. Before he goes to Mitzrayim, he sets up a yeshiva. Asked upon Vicharov, why did he send Yehuda down to open yeshiva? Because who was the Rosh Hashiva in the yeshiva? Who ran the yeshiva? Who do you think? How do you know? Maybe Yisachar. Good svara. Zok the Rambam in Avodah Zarah, Perek Aleph, Halacha Gimel, where the Rambam is describing what happened, how Avodah Zarah developed, how Avraham Avinu recognized the Boreh, how he transmitted his teachings to Yitzchak, and Yitzchak transmitting to Yaakov, says the Rambam, the Yaakov Avinu, limed bonav kulam, he taught all his sons, the hivdil Levi, and he separated Levi, uminu roish v'yeshivu b'yeshiva. For the Rambam, that Levi was the one in the yeshiva. So the Aspan Vitarov, since Levi is the Rosh Hashiva, it's his yeshiva, why is Yehuda being sent to open the yeshiva? Levi should go down. What's the point of sending Yehuda if anyway Levi is going to run the show? So that's the point of it, Rav. Because last week, when Shimon had been captured and they were told to take Binyamin down, and Yaakov refused to send Binyamin down, and then there was no more food, there was no choice, Yehuda persuades Yaakov, send Binyamin with me. And says Yehuda, in Perek Mem Gimel Pasuk Tes, Anoichi Arvenu, Miyodi Tevakshenu, Im Lo Yivaisi Ve'elecha, Ve'itzaktiv, Tzakti Lefonecha, Ve'chotosi Lecha Kol HaYomim. Yehuda makes a bold statement, says, I guarantee I'll bring him back. If not, I will sin, I'll be a sinner in this world and the world to come. Very bold statement. And the question is, Yehuda, how do you dare to make that commitment? How do you know you're going to have the ability to bring him back? You know that this wild leader of Egypt who accuses you of being a spy, and he's trying to bring Binyamin down. So how do you know you're going to be able to bring him back? What's the answer? Says the parameter of Dosidos. A person who can commit himself to beyond his responsibilities, he can open a yeshiva. Levi can't. Levi can teach. But if Yehuda had the breadkites, he was willing to accept upon himself things beyond his capabilities. I guarantee I'll bring him back. He's the one who opened yeshiva. He's the one who opened yeshiva. Yes?
Isn't there a Gemara in Megillah though that Yehuda, after he was able to enter into Shemayim or Gan Eden, he didn't understand what was going on in the
Beis Midrash? Right. Klal as chacham and afilo achinam bo. He got punished. He suffered because of that.
But he was the Rosh Yeshiva here.
Okay, but that klala, since he said, if I don't bring him back, I'll be nidui. So that's what happened to him.
So was he a Rosh Hashiva, or didn't understand what was going on in the Beis Midrash?
That's more the one shalim. Really, Levi taught the Torah, but to open the yeshiva, that he sent Yehuda to open the yeshiva. But what's Taka Pshat? So that's what to be Rosh Hashiva, to be the Gabba. Also, you have to be able to to run a shul, you know, you can't always wait till the money comes. You have to like commit yourself, sign checks without, which are beyond your capabilities. What's Taka Pshat? What was Yehuda thinking? I mean, what was Shivas do? What, they just wild, these completely irrational people and just do crazy things? See, the Parmenach was speaking by himself. That's who he was. People thought he was crazy. During the war, he came to Bnei Brak, and there was a big mountain there. And he said, I'm going to build a big yeshiva there. People thought, Nebuch, Yosef, he lost his family in the war. He jumped off the train. He lost his family. Oh, Nebuch. The guy lost his mind. The guy was crazy. He told me a big yeshiva, there's nothing there. So what's Taka Pshat? Fork the Parmenach Rav, the Gemara in the Dorim. Morning, Dorim, Daf Nun. So Mora says that there are six things that made Rabbi Kiva rich, and one of them is the Ahuma Trinisa. What's the story? Said the Ran on the spot on the page. The Ran, the Rashi, bring down that Rabbi Kiva needed money for the Talmidim, so he took a loan from the Matronisa. A Matronisa is like a rich lady, not Jewish, and she said, okay, I'll give you the loan, but want HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the sea to be the Aravim, to be the guarantees, guarantors. No, the time came for payment. Rabbi Kiva turned ill. He didn't come. So she went to the sea and she davened. She said, Rabbi Nishaloidam, you know Rabbi Kiva's ill, but you're an Arav. Pay up. At that moment, the daughter of the Kesar went crazy. And she filled up a box full of diamonds and she threw it into the sea. The sea brought it over and gave it and washed up by the Matronisa. She took her money. Then when Rabbi Kiva got well, he came to pay. He didn't know about this. She said, don't worry, the Arev has paid up. And you know what? I'll take from the box the value of the loan and all the rest you can keep. That's how Rabbi Kiva became rich. Anyway, the pshat is the Arev. If the Arev is the Kadosh Baruch Hu, so you can sign things which are beyond your capabilities. And that's pshat Rosh Hashivas and the Gaboyim. They hope the Arev is signing for them. They hope the Arev will help them out. One more point, and we'll finish. All right, one more. Yosef, and he end of the parasha. He becomes the minister of finance. He's running all the. No one has money. No one has food. He sells them the food in exchange for their assets. He ends up buying up the whole of Mitzrayim, except in Perek Mem Zayin Pasuk of Beis, Rak Admas Hakoyhanim Loikana. He didn't buy the priests of Egypt. He didn't buy their assets. Why? Because they get their food from Paray. The Ochlu Shukam Hashemasan and Paray. They didn't need to buy their food. Everyone else needs to pay for the food, so they have to sell the assets to Paro. But the priests, they get it from the Malchus, and therefore didn't have to sell the assets. But Yaakov Kamenetsky asked why Yosef ran the show. He was completely in control of Mitzrayim. Why did he give privileges to the priests of Mitzrayim? What does he care about the priests? This I saw in the Sefer Mechitzasam of Rabbi Lawrence. So it says Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, because Yosef knew that Am Yisrael are going to be enslaved. So he wanted the guarantee that Shevet Levi should not be part of the slavery. So what was the way? He kept that. That's why he gave special privileges to the priests. That they don't need to pay. And that way he was guaranteeing that Levi should be freed, because the prayer also had the priests of all the Jews. Therefore, that's why they didn't have to participate in the work of Mitzrayim, and they didn't get enslaved. So there was at the time in the Knesset there was the talk of the Gius Bnei Yeshivas. So this is not a new topic. It's been going for years. So Ben Gurion, who prided himself on being a big expert in Jewish, in Rambam, so he once met Rabbi Lawrence. He was the Chavar Knesset. So they said, what's your source that the yeshivas don't have to go to the army? So he brought down, he told him this, he just heard this from Yaakov Kamenetsky. He said, oh, you see from Paroi that, you know, even Paroi gave privileges to the Koimerim, to the priest. So also Jewish state can give privileges to the Bnei Yeshivas. So Ben Gurion said, I'm not Makabal because Levi, so only one tribe, Levi. But who says every Bacha could be a Levi? So he told him, the Rambam and the Shmita Yoivo. The Rambam says that anyone has the right to be a Levi. Ben Gurion said, I hear. I don't agree, but I hear where you're coming from. Just want to say that this, I want to add, nice vort, but you should know that the Yonasan ben Uziel says a different reason why Yosef gave privileges to the priest was that Koras HaToiv. Because he was supposed to be killed, you know, when he was accused of being sinning with Eshes Potiphar, so he should have been killed. But they were not mischus on him. They saved him. Therefore, then Koras HaToiv, he gave them privileges. Different shot. Okay, Shukoyach. Thank you very much. Have a good chance.